Todd Harrison is Director of Defense Budget Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, and looking at the potential purchase of the long-range strike bomber competition. Todd, thanks for coming on today. Peace and Fortune magazine is referring to this as the single Pentagon program that could upend the combat jet industry. And so the importance here is can't be overstated, but the Washington Post points out we really don't know much about this plane. What do we know about this potential program besides the price tag? Thanks for coming on, Todd.
Sure, glad to be back. Well, you know, we know what the Air Force has said publicly, and it said that they want to buy a new long-range bomber, and that they are trying to keep the cost. Their target is an average procurement unit cost of $550 million per copy, and they want to buy between 80 and 100 of these aircraft. We don't know, you know, the details on, you know, how big it would be, what kind of payload it would carry, or anything like that. Or range, or, you know, other important factors. But we do know that, you know, they're trying to recapitalize the bomber fleet that currently consists of, you know, B-52s that are as old as, you know, grandparents, and, you know, B-1s, and a small fleet of stealthy B-2s. We have 20 of them left in the inventory now. So that's the goal, and, you know, those are the cost targets they've given us so far.
The Air Force number that you pointed out would make it cheaper than the B-2, and I wonder if we have any context for whether that's possible or probable or likely, that something that replaces one thing in our defense inventory can be cheaper than the thing that it replaces.
Well, yeah, so it does strike you initially as being perhaps a bit too optimistic.
Counterintuitive, maybe, yeah. Was how I thought of it.
Yeah, so let's unpack the Air Force's number. So what are they really saying? First of all, the $550 million is an average procurement unit cost, assuming you buy 100 of them. So it does not include any of the research and development and test and evaluation costs that would be needed to develop the plane before you could even start procuring them. They're only counting the procurement money there. And, of course, the more you build of an aircraft, the better you get and the more efficient you get at building it, so the price comes down. Since they're assuming 100 aircraft, they're getting pretty far down that learning curve, and so that's helping push the price down lower. And the other factor for all the budget geeks out there is the $550 million quote is in base year 2010 dollars. It's not in today's dollars. It doesn't inflate over time. And in real life, of course, you're going to end up paying more than that. And we're not thinking in 2010 dollars anymore.
The concept then of that, I mean, so right off the bat, the $55 billion number isn't right. It's
not complete.
Yes. Oh, okay. That's a more fair way to put it. Yes, it's not complete. How does that inform the way that we should think about this then? And as we learn more about the aircraft, as we hopefully will in the coming years, how we should think about its place in the inventory?
Yeah, well, so the first thing to think about is it's going to be a major budget item for the Air Force for the next decade or more if they can keep the program alive. If you just look at the FY16 budget request that projects out to the year 2020, the Air Force has got $16 billion of research and development money in there for the bomber, and that's unclassified. You know, if they had other classified funding lines associated with it, you know, we wouldn't be able to see it. But it is a big budget item for the Air Force. It's going to be very difficult for the Air Force to maintain their plans for this program while also ramping up to full rate procurement for the F-35, for the KC-46A refueling tanker, and by the way, they also want to start buying a new trainer aircraft. So, you know, there's a perilous path here for the bomber program, given all of these other budget constraints that are going on at the same time. In terms of the, you know, inventory for the Air Force for bombers, it's a very important program to maintain the ability to do long-range strike from a penetrating aircraft. That is an aircraft that is stealthy and can evade enemy air defenses to go virtually anywhere in the world. You know, the B-52 and the B-1 are not stealthy aircraft. The B-2 is really 1980s era stealth technology. So we shouldn't expect that that's going to continue to work indefinitely into the future. And so the Air Force is really, you know, pinning the future of long-range strike on this, you know, penetrating aircraft that they're working on developing.
Todd, I did a quick calculation, and I came up, thanks to an online calculator, with the number $58.95 billion in 2015 dollars versus $55 billion in 2010 dollars. So not a tremendous creep, but we're already up $5 billion almost. Before we're even out of the gate. You mentioned the F-35. How does this line of conversation and some of the concerns people have about a lack of transparency about the capability of the aircraft match with your memory of this point in the discussion in the F-35?
Well, the F-35, I mean, they're obviously classified parts to the aircraft and to the program, but it was not a black program. You know, it was always, you know, pretty much out there in the open what kind of capabilities it would have. So the bomber is different in that respect, that they are keeping it close hold, exactly, you know, what this aircraft will be capable of doing, what's it going to look like, what kind of capabilities. So it is different in that respect. So it's not going to be open to as much public scrutiny, but the budget should be. It is a major acquisition program. It's not something that could be very easily buried in classified funding lines. And we're already seeing that they've got the research and development line in the budget for the past several years. They've had that funding in there. So we will be able to see the cost as happens often in defense acquisition programs. As they start to grow and the schedule starts to slip, we should be able to see that.
And I think it's important to point that out, because I recall the rollout of the B-2 in 1997, and in the years before that, the discussions around what's this aircraft even going to look like. If I recall correctly, there was a debate about what it was even going to look like until the 6 months or year, if I'm remembering right. This was a long time ago from my memory, about exactly what we were going to get when it finally rolled out because of the stealth components. And so what I'm getting at is, for folks who may want to compare this to the F-35 program, using that as a negative way, because of the nature of the program, that's probably not an entirely fair comparison.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a completely different type of aircraft. The other big difference between this and the F-35 is the F-35 is this joint program that has clued together requirements from the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marine Corps, all together trying to build, you know, basically a Swiss Army knife of a fighter jet. And, you know, that's not what's going on with LRSB. It is a bomber. It is a single service that's procuring it. So it's not going to run into some of those same problems. But the thing I would look out for that it could run into is a problem of concurrency, just like the F-35 has. And concurrency is when you push something into production prematurely while you're still in the process of developing and testing it. And what happens is you start buying procurement aircraft too soon. In the test program, you start to uncover problems, and then you have to pay to go back and fix those problems in the aircraft that you've already built. And the F-35 has a problem with concurrency. Many other programs in DoD also run into concurrency problems. It's a well-known phenomenon that is easily avoided. And, you know, I hope that the Air Force learns its lessons from previous programs, but I'm not confident that they have.
Well, and I would think after all of the pretty direct conversations that General Bogdan's had with people about the concurrency issue. I mean, I don't recall that he's ever come right out and said it was a bad idea, but he hasn't hesitated to talk about some of the issues that it's created. And so it would seem to me that would be something, yes, as you're suggesting, that right up front, to get this program off on the right foot, one would think they would try to avoid.
You would think that, but there's always this pressure within the services to get something out in the field as soon as possible, to get production lines up and running, because then you build a political constituency. It makes it harder to kill a program once you've got some hardware rolling down a production line. And, of course, you've got industry is always pressing the government as well to move into production sooner by painting rosy pictures of, you know, the test program and how everything's going to go so much faster and smoother, and they've done all this analysis so they don't need to do as much testing, or they're more confident in their testing, and really it's just to keep the program moving along faster. So there's, you know, not as much of an opportunity for someone in the Pentagon or in Congress to come in and cancel it or slow it down.
Just a minute or so left, Todd, but we've kind of danced around the budget situation in the Pentagon. You alluded to it a little bit ago, but let's take it on directly to finish up. It strikes me that a program this large, even when it's broken out over the period of time or the number of copies or however you want to break it down, this is going to be a tough one to slide in there, isn't it?
Absolutely. I don't see, you know, looking at current budget projections, whether you're looking at what the president has requested, which is above the BCA budget caps, or if you just extend the BCA budget caps out into the 2020s, I think there's no avoiding the fact that the Air Force and DOD overall have a modernization bow wave in the 2020s, and I don't think they're going to be able to handle that bow wave as it's currently planned. They've just got so many platforms and weapon systems in the pipeline for replacement and new development that I just don't see how they can execute it all, giving any, you know, realistic sense of what funding might be available. And even if they had the money, it's so much that I think certain parts of our defense industry will simply be saturated and would not be able to execute all of this effectively. So there is a big modernization bow wave coming. And, you know, really, now is the time to start planning to avoid that bow wave.